5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's the new Panic Room Radio Show, brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing. Experience publishers of horror, noir, bizarro, and all things dark in paperback, ebook, and audiobook. You can find us at www.hellboundbooks.com. But first, get your feet up and enjoy the show.
Walking on imported air. Ooh, it makes you Hello, it is. It's the Panic Room. It's the new Panic Room, which is, it's not really. I mean, we've been going. I think we predate the Bible now. We've been going that long, but it is the 9th of November, 2023, 9:30 Central, and here we are again on the run. It's almost Thanksgiving. Halloween's been and gone, and Thanksgiving is looming. So I've bought my turkey already, which is great. Always like to be prepared. You know, I've had many years in the past where it's been, because it kind of sneaks up on me because I'm not used to the whole Thanksgiving thing, because, you know, being foreign and all, you know. And, you know, I've been trying to find a turkey at the last minute. Ain't easy. So, yeah, we're all ready. Get everything in, and all we need to do is cook it, I suppose, unless you need it raw. But we'll give it a go, see how we get on. But anyway, it is it's my favourite time of the evening when we do this. Well, yeehaw, Steve. How are you? So I was distracted there for a minute because I was in an idle moment. In an idle moment, I thought, oh, because I'm going to be getting a new car sort of this time next year. I'm going to start looking in earnest. So I just thought, let's just see what's out there, because now I'm getting bombarded with fucking, you know, everything. Every listener journal just popped up now, and it's just like, ooh, maybe I could get that now. And there's a chance, no, there'll be good deals this time next year, because it'll be April 2025 when my dear sweet little baby daughter will become 16. Hopefully she's going to get her permit next year, get her trained up, and then she can... ulterior motive for me is then she can drive her damn self to school, you know?
Yes. Hopefully you guys both survive. It's our hard
year. We will. I taught all my kids to drive, and they'll all do well. she's a lot like me driver-wise. She's very volatile and a bit of a temper.
I can only imagine.
Fun. So that'll all kick off next. They'll get a permit next April, and then the objective then is to she'll have my car, I'll get a new one, and that's kind of scary. It's going to be a very poignant moment, I have to say. But then again, I'm thinking, well, if I've got my new car now, it'll keep the miles down on the old one. So I'm sort of, you know, but I think, well, but this is going to happen. This is going to go on for like a year now. should I get one? And then they'll pop up and it'll be like, oh, you know, that's too good to miss. So I guarantee I'll buy one well before time.
Yeah,
I guarantee it. But
it'll be fun.
Oh well, it'll
Getting
be fun.
Car is so much fun. Yeah,
it is. But then again, I love my car. I'm glad she's staying in the family. But it's going to be a sad moment when I sort of hand her over. You know, so you know, maybe she's been very good to us. I have to say, she's been absolutely fantastic. Mm. So. Matt spends a lot less time in the shop than your car does.
You know, I wasn't going
to
mention it, but
yeah, I did.
You know, and
yeah.
Mostly it was, you know, warranty work, so I'm not, you know, that doesn't bother me too much, but yeah, it has had.
Yeah, but it still shouldn't be going wrong. It shouldn't. I mean, you've got a highly engineered bit of German equipment. It should not be going wrong with such regularity, you know.
Yeah, it's still. I still love her. She's good to me. So, and she's
not
in the shop now. Okay.
Well, that's this week. I mean, there's time yet. It's only Wednesday, so you know, there is plenty time for something to go wrong. It's funny. My ex-wife had a Panamera, and it was all. I remember we drove up to Dallas. This is when my daughter was doing cheerleading. It was a cheerleading regional competition. And it just, this thing just, it only had like 5 miles on the bloody clock, and it just packed in. The engine literally just, and we had to get rescued from the side of the road. It was just like,
all this money
for this, and it's a gorgeous car.
Yeah.
All the bells and whistles, gorgeous. It just didn't go. Mm. And it's like, well,
wow.
I'd rather spend a bit less, have a few less, you know, gadgetries, and actually be able to get somewhere in it.
Right,
call me
right.
old-fashioned,
yeah.
If you will. Call me old-fashioned, if you will. But that's what I expect.
Yeah, like our cars to go. Yeah.
Yes.
you know, the one cool thing when my car is in the shop is the fact that we have the Boxster, and it's only a two-seater. So I have to tell my son, sorry, you know, I would take you, but we just don't have room.
Yeah, sorry, lad. Oh, well, I'm minor.
Yeah, so sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, it's too shit, kid.
Not so too bad. Yeah. I mean, he's 19 now.
Well,
so
he should be driving his own car by now.
He's working on it. He's got
Excellent.
A bunch of
Good
money
luck.
Saved up, and he's just waiting on the right car to come along, I guess. But
yep.
He's ready. Yeah.
Excellent. Good. So again, exciting for him. So,
Jack,
I sit and talk about cars. I'm in a car mood. You'd be lucky if I actually bought a car by the end of the show, funnily enough, because I'm still in that mood right now, which would be very silly. It would be rather silly, but, you know, there's not enough silliness around at the moment. So there's nothing wrong with a bit of, no, there's not. It's everything serious, you know.
We have
this show, and what delights have you got in store for us this evening?
Yeah, I'm excited. Our first guest we have on the show tonight, we have a historical thriller author, Cynthia Raleigh, and I'm excited to talk to her. And then a little bit later in the show, we'll have a returning guest. It's been a while since we've had him on, horror author Ezekiel Kincaid.
You certainly don't forget a name like that, but yeah, I remember. It doesn't seem I always say it doesn't seem that long, and then you look it up and it was like 5 years ago, so I'm not going to say it this time. It's just, time is just it's just whizzing by. But so I think without further ado, we should drag our first guest kicking and screaming from the virtual green room.
Alrighty, our first guest of the evening, we have historical thriller author Cynthia Raleigh.
Hello.
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 Thank you
Hi
for
there.
Joining us, Cynthia. Hey, how are you doing?
I am great. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you for joining us. I can't remember the last time we had a historical thriller. A genre that fascinates me. I mean, I'm a big fan of research, but I guess there's a lot goes into it.
There is. I fortunately enjoy doing research, so that's actually one of the funnest parts for me, putting it together.
Brilliant.
And creating stories.
Do you have a specific time period, or do you sort of? Time, a bit like Doctor Who, sort of dot around, or how do you do that?
Well, I have two different series, and one of them is a genealogy murder mystery series, and that's contemporary. Oh. But the book that I was going to talk about tonight is the first book in my Lantern Ordinary Witches series, and it takes place in 1660, so the English colonies in Connecticut.
A golden age. When we British still own this fine country.
That is true. That is true.
Before we deliberately let you win the War of Independence.
Right. We were
sick of it. We said, "Oh, just let them have it. We don't know." I think we knew how it was going to end up. And I bet there's a lot of Americans now wishing we hadn't let you win. So. There you go.
That is true. I have heard that.
Yep.
Yeah, I usually don't ask a whole lot of questions when it comes to the contemporary or historical, because I had an embarrassing moment years ago.
Yeah, you did.
See, James is laughing already. Yeah, didn't she already say it was like contemporary? And then I was like, what time period was this in?
Yeah, you did.
Moment.
It was one of your funniest moments, and I'm not like you forget it after all, even in all these years. So, I wrote a ghost wrote it. It was a young adult historical murder mystery romance thing set in Regency period England for a client who was actually in Australia. And that was fun. I mean, I actually studied Regency period England back in high school and obviously had series 3 of Blackadder to as reference as well. Again, a lot of research. You know, some of the stuff.
Is.
I mean, it's one of my favorites, because in the book they attended a society ball, and in those days, of course, they didn't have indoor laboratories. They used to just go in the pot in the corner, and they'd carry on just chatting. It's part of the social thing. I'm just going to go for a poo now. And go in the corner. Just like, wouldn't that be great? If only we could do that now.
You don't see that in Pride and Prejudice on TV, do you?
You know,
no.
So I think we should all write in and pull them up on their lack of authenticity. You know, you need to. Colin Firth needs to be having a poo in the pot in the corner when he's talking to Mrs. Faversham. I'm going for a big wee now, and just yeah, that'd be great. Yeah,
keep talking. Excuse me, just a moment.
Talk about.
I'm sorry. I chose that period when I was really young. I was the kid that always wanted to be the witch at Halloween, and took all the library books that had anything to do with goats, witches, goblins. It didn't matter. And I've always been very interested in that. And I took a trip when I was 16 to Boston and the Salem area. And so I was all fascinated by its history.
Fantastic. Uh-huh.
And from the time I was young, I always thought about these women who were accused of some pretty amazing things, and they were publicly shamed, you know, dragged through the streets, put through tests, tortured, but none of them actually could do what they were accused of doing, and yet
of course, they were
often executed. So I, over the decades, really have thought, well, what if they could, though? What if they accused someone, and yes, you could do that. Probably it's not going to turn out the way they thought. And so that's
like
where
it.
This series came from.
I like it.
Yeah, she, Yarrow and her sister Tansy, her mother was an herbalist, so they are named after herbs, and their father came from England and Wales. Her mother was from Wales. And settled in Connecticut. And they built an ordinary, which is the New England term for an inn or a pub or a tavern. usually had rooms to rent, you know, a couple rooms to rent, and often served as a place for meetings. Because in 1660, this is 32 years before Salem, because I didn't want to tie it into Salem. This is before that.
Right.
32 years is a long time in the colonies, and there were not very many people. So everybody depended on everyone else. And so how would the society view someone if they found out someone in their midst was a witch? But she was the village midwife. She's the herbal woman, and she owns the only inn that you have for many miles around. Are you going to kick them out, or are you going to keep them? So her parents die in an accident. So she is 20. She's old enough. She takes over the lantern, the ordinary. And that's well, okay with some people, and some it doesn't. And just like women of history, the women who were at most risk were the ones who were the midwives, because if anything went wrong, someone had to be blamed, and who treated the sick, and who maybe had a craft, a profession that was skilled, making soap or something big, you know, that competed with others. They were the most at risk. So she's facing that, but she, in the first book, Summoning the Winds, she's trying very hard not to let anyone know this, and no one does know it at first. So it's not – there's a section that I picked out of it that does concern the ages-old – and it was illegal at the time – test for witches of swimming, you know, where they threw the person in the water. And that does follow the typical witch trial thing, but the book itself doesn't really, but I don't want to give anything away. And so it progresses as she lives her life and takes care of her younger sister, but how things begin to progress and things happen that are leading up to Salem, and how it gets revealed and then what happens at that point. So there's a lot of magical stuff in it, but there's a lot of realism, too, and there is a lot of real history.
Mm. So how do you go about, you know, researching something like that? Because I imagine documents and records of the time are pretty patchy.
They are, but there are still quite a few, and most of them have now been scanned and are available online. Through whether it's the Internet Archive or the Gutenberg Project, or even Google Books has a lot of old manuscripts that you can download and read for free, as well as just websites that maybe are connected to a museum or a large library where they have sponsored putting this on their website so you can read old documents. And I've traveled through New England a little bit, so there are still extant examples of things that you can see, whether it's the witch marks on houses or the things that they found when they were repairing or remodeling a house, like witch bottles and shoes that people put under the hearth to protect the house. You know, they find these things as they're doing repairs. So you can see that and learn from diaries. There are a lot of records left that are personal that are now, with the Internet coming to light, for other people to see. People who have left their letters, their diaries, their ledgers, the museums, but unless you visited there, you wouldn't know. But now they're becoming available, so you can learn a lot about what people thought of other people just by reading their diaries.
Oh, that's cool.
That is just fascinating. Yeah, I definitely want to hear more. Did you have an excerpt that you're going to read for us tonight?
I do. Okay, so you want me to just start?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah.
Okay. This is, like I said, this is the trial by water, which they call swimming, that they are subjecting the main character to. Her name is Yarrow Pickering. So this is the excerpt. Once the water was chest high on the men, Uriah called back to shore. Is this far enough, Hugh? Yes, but when you release her, push her away from you. Get her into the deep water, came the reply. Uriah and Thaddeus thrust Yarrow away from them. She had time for one desperate gasp before the water, the cold water, closed around her. The sky above was broken into warped panes of blue glass. Her mind fought against her body's desire to panic, concentrating on the skill that would save her. As she sank, the water turned murky from the sediment churned up by the men's boots. Within moments, Yarrow's folded and bound body rested on the bottom. Her auburn hair formed a halo around her head. She couldn't allow herself to think about what was happening on shore. She couldn't lose patience. She relaxed and observed the bed of the cove, the occasional flash of a curious fish, bits of vegetation borne on the tide bobbing just below the surface. She felt the gentle pull of the waves forward, then back. Slowly, with some trepidation at first, she blew out her last breath of air, closed her mouth tightly. Keeping her intentions strong and clear in her mind, Yarrow very slowly breathed in through her nose. The strange sensation of bitter, cold seawater flowing into her lungs created the urge to sneeze. She blinked rapidly, resisting the temptation, knowing it would pass as she enchanted herself into the water. Commanding any element was difficult and not necessarily predictable. She released herself to the water, became part of it, offered her own energy rather than demanding and taking without giving. Already the feeling of suffocation was easing. Yarrow expelled the water from her lungs cautiously and inhaled again, this time deeply. The feeling of dread vanished. The chill of the water was exhilarating, and the liquid quenched her need for oxygen as though it was completely natural to breathe water. Yarrow turned her attention to the ropes digging into her flesh. Her mind fastened on the fox, carved of antler, tucked inside her chemise, which nestled, still warm, against her icy flesh. She borrowed from its warmth. The heat of the energy and the frost of the water swirled within her, each repelling yet complementing the other. The water around her body wavered, like the patterns of heat over a field on a hot summer day. Yarrow felt the rope slacken. Squinting through the debris, she peered at the restraints. There was definite loosening and fraying of the fibers. She was able to move her wrist back and forth. She watched as fibers unraveled, gave way, and her arms wriggled free. With great relief, she straightened her body and stretched and arched her back, relishing the freedom. From the direction of the shoreline, she noticed disturbance in the turbid water. Through the gloom, two pair of legs were visible working their way toward her. She let her body go limp. A silhouette blocked the brightness of the sky, and a knee made contact with her forehead. Hands plunged into the water searching for her. In the moment before the hands found her, Yarrow released the spell. Instantly, she was desperate for air, but it was necessary to wait as long as she could before trying to breathe air again. The hands firmly clasped her arms and hauled her up through the water. Reaching the surface, she kept her eyes closed, her body loose. Her rescuer lifted her to his shoulders and made his way back to the bank. Her seemingly lifeless form was laying face down on the ground. The man knelt next to her. It was as long as she could wait. Her mouth opened and all the seawater in her lungs spewed out, splashing against the pebbles. She gagged fiercely, her throat blazing. Briny water dribbled out of her nose, stinging, and ran into her mouth. She needed a cough but could scarcely draw enough air to do it. Dane Oakley exhaled long and loudly. "Oh, then, that's a release, miss." He patted her on the back, uncertain what else to do. The villagers crushed forward in a tight half circle. "Get back," Judicious, also drenched, shouted and pushed at the crowd. He'd been the other figure waiting out to look for her. He pointed at the retreating figures of Goody and Minister Chambers. "You two stop right there. Go no further." The two stared at him. "Wait there," he demanded. The minister, normally inclined to follow no counsel other than his own, halted. And that's the end of that.
Oh, my gosh. I definitely have to read this when you're making up that signed copy. It's
excellent. Stop it. Don't encourage her. Don't. Just tell her no. She has to learn. No. You can't.
She's got shelves and shelves of free.
It's the only reason she does the show, Cynthia, to be honest, is to get free books. It's funny. I have to say, I think anybody who knows me well enough knows. I mean, drowning is my thing. is my big irrational fear. I didn't learn to swim until I was 33 because of my fear of drowning. It stems back to a childhood accident when I was, I think, four in a swimming pool. Just that, you triggered me, I have to say. It was incredibly well done. Yeah, I know the feeling of your lungs filling with water, and and like you say, what they did to those poor women was, I think, wasn't it, if they sank, they were innocent, and if they floated, they were witches, and they'd execute them. Was that how it worked?
Correct. Every now and then, one who sank would survive. But, and that's what she's trying to do here, is to survive the ordeal, but make it look like she almost didn't. But yeah, most of them did. And then they're like, she was innocent.
She was innocent, and she's rejoiced.
She's dead now.
But she's dead. Oh, yeah. Mm.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, about that. Oops.
I think the only one that I know of who actually underwent the swimming trial was in Virginia, and her name was Grace Sherwood, and I believe there is a statue to her in Great Neck. I think it's Great Neck.
Wow.
She survived her ordeal.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I can imagine how scary that would be. Oh, my goodness.
Right.
Yeah, you pretty much know you're going to die anyway. Either way.
Yeah.
Do you want quick or drawn out? You know, it's kind of what it came down to a lot of the time. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. So this is a book series. How many books are there in the series so far?
There is one more, and it's called Sister of Wales, but there are at least two more in the making. Mm-hmm.
Awesome.
Well, and how many do you, I mean, have you got a plan, or are you just going to keep going until you fed up with it?
I said at least, because I'm not going to say, oh, no, this is going to be the fourth one will be the last one. I mean, it is the only four that I have planned. But, you know, I'll see how it goes. And if there's another one that needs to be written, I would do that. But if not, then there would be four.
Cool.
Now, do you definitely do you write you write contemporary as well as historical?
I write a genealogical murder mystery story, which is contemporary, and there is also a lot of history in that. My main character in that series, and I was a registered nurse for a really long time, and so she's a nurse, and she's a travel nurse. So I can put her in different places without it seeming odd, you know, that if you have a job, but you're in Richmond, Virginia one day, and you're in Russellville, Kentucky another day, you know, so I have her travel around, and it gives her the opportunity to be in different places. But I do include some of, a lot of the stories, it's not that I include local history in my story, I actually am inspired by that local history to write that story. So, you know, every place, every family, I'm big on genealogy, there's always a story. Nobody has a boring family. There are scoundrels and curmudgeons and, you know, rogues everywhere. And there are a lot of really interesting stories, and they don't have to be big news, but it can make a great story and a great mystery. So I do have historical facts, but I also, you know, it's in a fictional story.
Mm-hmm. Now, is there any genre that you haven't written in that you would like to?
I haven't written an actual horror book. I would definitely like to try that at some point. I do have a true crime book also, just one. But and maybe, I know I was a big fantasy, like sci-fi fantasy fan when I was younger too, so that appeals to me also. I don't know.
Yeah, true crime. I had I loved true crime when I was younger. It is so much creepier in my opinion than fictional, just because it's true. You know, I mean, yeah. I read one book that was based on the town that I was living in at the time. And, you know, as you're reading and you can picture the streets that, you know, something like, you know, an awful thing happened, it just makes it so so more real and creepy. And,
right.
It was rough.
There was a serial killer in the city that I grew up in before I was born, but it wasn't too long before I was born, and I can still remember people talking about it, like, still, you know, he was like the boogeyman. If you don't get home on time, he's going to get you. You know, Leslie Irvin's going to get you. And it turned out that he lived only a few blocks from where, as an adult, I lived. So, as you said, you know, you're looking at these streets with a different eye, like, you know, he lived here, and this happened in this place, and he used to frequent this restaurant, and I've been there. So, yeah, it makes it really real, and it is creepy.
Mm-hmm. Now, with you doing historical type things and being into witches, you, I'm sure you've heard of the Fox sisters in
They were in the north.
Hydesville, New York.
Yeah.
My mom lived in the house that was exactly across the street from the Fox sisters' house when I was born. I thought that was, she had a really cool story about the man who lived in the house, you know, years and years after the Fox sisters, of course, but he was a really weird man, and it came over to her house before she hadn't even told my dad that she was pregnant yet. And he gave her a cookbook and a jar of honey, and he told her, you know, use the honey and, you know, use the recipes in this book. He goes, if you don't, your child is going to be born with bad blood. And like I said, she hadn't told anybody she was pregnant. And she just thought, what a crazy old kook. And, of course, she didn't listen to him. And I was born with, like, really bad jaundice and had to have, like, a total blood transfusion. So pretty cool story.
That
is so
amazing.
If anything
that
like
scary.
That happens to you, use the honey and
at least listen.
I always thought that was really cool. I've had so much
amazing.
Fun with you, Cynthia. You have to promise to come back on the show.
Sure, I would love to. I hope I haven't rattled too much, but I do get this stuff.
No, this has been a lot of fun. We definitely have to do it again soon. We are just about out of time for our first segment, but before we let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
I am on TikTok under my name, Cynthia Raleigh, and I am on Twitter, I guess X. I still call it Twitter, under my name also. If you search Cynthia Raleigh, you can find it. And, I don't have so much of a presence on Facebook, but those are the main ones.
Awesome. Again, I can't wait to have you back. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Summoning the Winds by Cynthia Raleigh. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, both of you. I really
enjoyed
it. Thank you. All right.
We will speak again soon. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Wow, do you know, I flew by. What a fascinating lady. I must admit, having touched on historical fiction, and I know just how, I mean, it was difficult enough researching Regency period England. Even I did have some prior knowledge, so to go even farther back, I mean, I tip my stovepipe hat to them. I can write that stuff because take on four books. I mean, that is just phenomenal. Because I think once you know the background of the time, because I thought, well, I should take what I learned doing the ghostwrite on the Regency period, and I should maybe just do a, you know, horror story, you know, like a werewolf in Regency period England, or, you know, Pride, Prejudice and Werewolves or something, you know, but... Who knows? Who knows? Just take some contemporary horror and stick it in Regency period England, just because I've got all the notes, you
Right.
But
right.
Anywho, it is time for a break. So we're gonna have a break.
Panic Room Radio Show is brought to you by Hellbound Books Publishing, purveyors of all manner of dark fiction. You can find the publisher, along with links to all of their available works across platforms, at hellboundbookspublishing.com. In the mood for something steamy to read? Check out erotica author Jennifer Lynn at jenniferlynnerotica.com. You can find James and Xtina at their respective websites, jameslongmore.com for James and darkpoetprincess.com for Xtina. Don't forget to follow The Panic Room on social media, Facebook unofficial, The Panic Room Radio Show, our Vimeo channel with all of our previous shows, the new Panic Room Radio Show, and come visit our website, www.panicroomradio.com.
Welcome back to part two of The New Panic Room, brought to you by HellboundBooks.com.
Love that song. It's a golden oldie. It took me right back to the last time I heard it. Especially a listener, a friend of mine, a regular listener, And Janina, if you're listening, thank you for listening in.
Hi.
She said, you know, she said, you have the musical taste of an 89-year-old. I said, well, you know, if that means good musical taste, then thank you. You know, I'm subjected to modern day, and I use the word in air quotes, music. My daughter listens to it. We have it on in the car on the way, you know, to and from school and what have you. And, you know, you can't hear the words, to be honest.
No.
Although, to be fair, you can hear some of the words, and the words you do hear, you don't want it. And you know me, I'm no prude. You know, I have a colourful vocabulary, but seriously, I mean, you know, this is mostly, you know, it's just like, what? You know, sometimes she'll be there, she's singing along to them, and I'll just catch a lyric, and I'll just look at like, what did they just say? they're going to do, what with their bitches? I mean, why did it know? You know, what happened to songs about falling in love and being happy and all the jolly things and not that, dear me.
I do listen to a lot of like 50s and 60s. I have like a playlist and stuff, and occasionally the husband lets me play it in the car. And there are times we'll hear a song, and I'll just be singing because I know the song well. And then I'm like, oh my gosh, can you believe what they just said or what they're probably talking about? And it's a lot dirtier than we ever knew at the time. You know, we were younger.
Some of them have pretty deep meanings, but now they're not subtle about it at all.
No, not at all.
They're not subtle about it at all. And it's just like, but yeah, my daughter refers to my music as old man music. You know, sometimes I pull up to pick her up, and I've got my music on in the car, which immediately goes off the second she gets it. I'm not listening to old man music. So, oh, you listen to your old man music? Yeah, I listen to my old man music, but for me, you know, those are the golden days, really. Like I said, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, 80s started getting a bit wobbly. 90s, anything beyond sort of 89, 90s, like, lost on me, because like that's when music stopped being good, I think.
I started getting old,
I think that's probably it.
I didn't hate grunge, but I think after anything after grunge I was not a fan of, but the music,
but now it all
just,
and again,
awful.
It makes me sound old. It all sounds a
me
lot
too.
The same, to be honest.
My daughter will
it
send
all
me
sounds
songs
the same.
And she's, you know, she's 25, and she'll send me songs and tell me how good they are, and I'll start playing it. I'm like, this song? This is the one you said, this one's good?
Yeah,
what?
This is terrible. This is awful.
I'm like,
stop,
I don't even know
rubbish.
What this is. And she'll tell me it's like synth wave. I'm like, are those words supposed to mean something to me?
That's not even it's not even a word, is it? It's not even a real word.
So just leave it.
Anywho, we sound like a couple of old codgers now. So probably time to bring on a guest who's hopefully will be not as old and miserable as we are.
Well, first I want to shout out to Sam. She's not going to be with us tonight. So we definitely
miss you, Sam.
Can't wait to talk to her next week. Yeah. So I hope you have a good weekend, Samantha, the lovely Samantha. So, yeah, okay. All right. Our second guest of the evening, we have horror author Ezekiel Kincaid.
Hello.
Hey, James and Xena. Thank you for having me back on the show. I'm so thrilled and honored to...
Well, thank you for coming back. You know what to expect, and yet you still came back. So thank you.
I have been told that I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, and I'm a glutton for punishment. So I'm all for it.
Well,
yeah,
that's certainly borne out. Yes, yeah, because you're back.
I actually looked it up, and Ezekiel was with us November of last year. So it's
Has it been a year?
So it's actually a year.
It does not seem. When you know, she said he was about five, he was only on a couple of months ago. What's going on? Wow, that just shows you how quickly time is. I'm depressed now. Thanks for that. It's a whole year's gone by. So what have you been doing in the last 12 months then?
Well, I have been doing my thing, writing and writing and more writing. I've also started a professional paranormal research. So that has taken up some more of my time. Finished up a chaplain internship since we last talked.
Forgive my ignorance. Is that chaplain as in Charlie Chaplin or?
No, I don't do silent movies because I can't dance very well.
Right. I was just chaplain as in. Gotcha. So I wasn't trying to be funny there. So I was just asking because it's funny. We had Ramsey Campbell on a few months ago, and he was a huge he's a huge Three Stooges fan. So we went off on that tangent. So you were as an internship as a hospital chaplain.
Yes, as a hospital chaplain.
Oh, cool.
And the area that I'm in right now does not have any chaplain opening, so I am back working in pest control again while I kind of see what happens on the chaplain front. So I'm basically like a glorified starship trooper, which is pretty fun.
Nice.
Actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I bet it would give you a lot of inspiration to write some spooky stories.
Oh, look, especially what I saw today, y'all. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, gosh.
You would not. I have never seen so many roaches in one place and so much roach doo-doo in one place. Like, it was so bad we had to wear our respirators in there.
Oh, jeez, wow. Yeah. So what was it? Was this somebody's apartment or something? Or?
It was an apartment. Yeah, it was an apartment complex.
Oh, my God.
And I'm telling you that, so they have these roaches called German roaches, and they infest, and they just spread they multiply like gremlins. And
are those the really big ones or the little tiny ones?
No, they're little. They're small.
Oh, right. Yeah, uh-huh.
If we go in this apartment, the walls are just, I'm not exaggerating, they are covered in roaches. The corners, the door frame.
Oh, my goodness.
Everything.
Yeah.
And we start doing our flush out stuff and going in the cabinets and everything, and the walls just start turning brown with roaches.
Oh, God.
And
they're all over
the floor, and there's like poo smears, like just from all the roaches. Because they leave their excrement behind and like wallow in it, and it was everywhere. It was something like out of Creepshow, like it was out of a horror movie. That bad, but
oh my goodness,
that's kind of
it's
fun.
Funny.
For me.
We get the odd one here. I mean, because where our house is, it's literally in the middle of a forest. I mean, there's lots of trees, lots of, you know, what have you. And so especially when it rains, obviously if it rains, the drains fill and they sort of make their way in. We get all this, because they come in and they've sort of dead within a few, but, you know, they just get one. And it's like, creeps me. That is just nightmare. But again, as you say, it could be the basis of a great horror novel.
Yeah, gives me the shivers to think about. But yeah, it definitely sounded like you were describing a horror novel.
They were falling off the ceiling onto us.
Oh,
like we had to shake out our clothes before we got back in the truck and everything, because it was raining roaches.
And was somebody living there?
Yeah,
the roaches were,
Well, yeah. Wow.
Yes,
that's
somebody
was.
Somebody's actually living in that, in those conditions. That is awful.
Never alone.
I mean, is it possible to clear an infestation like that? I mean, it can't be easy.
It's not easy. We spent hours there today, and then we'll be back there in 2 weeks to follow up and check it out. But it was just it was thousands of roaches, thousands.
Oh.
Of them.
Okay. So you are here to talk to us about your book, Johnny Walker Ranger, Demon Slayer, Volume 2.
Yes.
This time, Johnny messes with the multiverse and all hell breaks loose. So tell us a little bit about it.
So Johnny Walker Ranger, Volume 2, picks right up where the first one left off. And the thing that I try to do with this series is kind of make it to where you don't have to – you haven't have to have read the first book to understand the second book. There's stuff along the way that kind of fills you in on what happens. But, you know, if you've read the first book, it's definitely going to enhance your reading of the second book. And it picks right up where the first one left off, with Johnny saving Oxford, Mississippi from a demon apocalypse. And he's got his love interest, Sam, and he's still leading his team called the Bruce Campbells. And they think,
I like it.
They think everything has calmed down for a little bit. So Johnny gets engaged to Sam, and they're going to get married. And then they run into some demons. And this outbreak kind of starts to happen again. And Johnny decides that in order for him to become a more powerful and more world-famous demon slayer, he needs to go back in time to meet Jesus to get his name in the Bible and write his own gospel. So Johnny gets Gabriel the angel drunk and steals his God phone, and he has a time travel app on the God phone. And so Johnny goes back in time to try to write his own gospel and get it in there. And it causes a huge butterfly effect and screws a whole lot of things up. You got a bunch of Johnnies running around. He's never been a demon slayer, so they have to fix that. And then as his punishment, he gets exiled to an Amish community to stop a demon outbreak in an Amish community. So it's very over the top humor. It's very Ash versus Evil Dead like with the humor and the sarcasm and the blood and guts. So it's like the book version of a B movie horror comedy, if that makes sense.
I love it.
Oh yeah, I'm in. I want the free signed copy of this one.
I could get you one of those. And Johnny's a redneck from Oxford, Mississippi, so it's very blue collar, and it's written from his first person perspective. So he's got his own style and everything like that. So it's definitely one of those books for me that is very therapeutic to write. It's very fun.
Whenever
I'm feeling down or sad, I always write Johnny, because it always makes me laugh and puts me in a much better mood. So it's a real easy read, very lighthearted, very non-PC humor, over the top blood and guts. So if you like your gross out, over the top, like Evil Dead violence, then it's got a lot of that in there, a lot of great one-liners. I mean, it's what you would expect with a redneck leading a demon-killing team called the Bruce Campbells. So I should put it that way.
That sounds
we
brilliant.
Have,
absolutely.
We
love
have
it.
A treat tonight. We have an excerpt from the book, and it's read by one of our favorite voice narrators, Mark Harrietta. We just love Mark. So, but yeah, we have an awesome clip to play. So yeah, you can push the button.
Does it need setting up, or am I just pressing the button?
Yeah, I kind of set it up. I mean, this excerpt that's playing is Johnny is taking his fiance, our girlfriend Sam, to Monster Jam to propose to her, and his way to propose to her is during the Monster Jam event, he's going to get the monster truck Grave Digger and ride out to propose to her, and they want to get their picture on the Jumbotron. However, Johnny goes to get Grave Digger, he runs into some trouble. So this excerpt kind of gives you, it doesn't give away all of the major plot twists and plot points, but it gives enough so that you can get the feel of Johnny, get the feel of what the violence is like, and kind of what you're in store for with the book.
Awesome.
Brilliant. Okay, then I shall press the button and away we go.
Friday night rolled around, and I had my plan in place. I even went back to Walmart and found me a Gravedigger t-shirt. I was sporting it along with a hat Briggs loaned me just for the occasion. It was black with a net back and white front. Across the front in red, it stated, "If you ain't a redneck, you ain't shit." Sam wore a black tube top, cut-off jean shorts, and one of them Bret Michaels fake-ass-looking cowboy hats. We made our way to our seats, which were as low as you could get without being on the floor. The entire stadium exuded the aroma of beer, oil, and body odor. After we settled in, Sam started to take in her environment. She glanced around at the historic piece of redneck culture she found herself in.
"Johnny, these people are interesting."
She adjusted her hat and leaned back in her seat. I gave her a sinister laugh and rubbed my hands together. "Yeah, darling, you just wait. They're just getting warmed up." Before the words finished dropping off my lips, a family of four came plodding down the row behind us. The dad wore a green shirt with blue jeans held up by a pair of rainbow suspenders. His humongous beer gut made the middle of the shirt look like a lush green hill in Ireland. I had the irresistible urge to knock his ass out, lay him on his back, and roll down it. The wife was just as fat, with curly blonde hair and about three chins. She wore a white faded Bigfoot shirt. The monster truck, not the cryptid dumbasses, and cut-off jean shorts. I now had the irresistible urge to puke. Their two twin boys must have been around 6 or 7 and looked like the inbred versions of Tweedledee and Tweedledum. They came down the aisle dressed in the same black Gravedigger shirt from Walmart I had on, licking away on pink cotton candy. The dad went to sit down. One of the twin boys wasn't paying attention and ran right into his arm, which held a giant Bud Light can. Some of the beer sloshed up and spilled onto the concrete floor. His redneck voice rang loud and clear. "God dang it, little Adam. Watch where the fuck you going. I paid $9 for this here beer. You just knocked out about 75 cents. Give me them motherfucking coins I just gave you." Dad put little Adam in his place.
"Oh, shut your damn mouth, Harold. Let the boy alone," Mama said, sticking up for her boys.
"Damn it, woman. If you won't keep your teeth, shut the hell up. My damn money and my damn beer spill my shit."
The dad kept mumbling. The other twin boy spoke up, both hands gripping his stomach.
"God dang, Mama. My tummy yelling like a sumbitch. I think I need to make a Mexican waterfall."
Dad didn't like that.
"Damn it, Murray, I told your stupid ass to stop eating out the dog bowl. What the hell's wrong with you? Was you eating Spike's fucking kibbles and bits again?"
Murray didn't have to answer. Guilt oozed from his face. The dad set his beer down, stood up, and adjusted his pants.
"Come on, boy. Let's get you to the shitter before them trucks come out."
During the entire conversation, Sam sat there, hand over her mouth, slouching in her chair. I had my arm around her, and the look on her face was one of horror. I leaned in close to her ear and whispered, "You know what a Mexican waterfall is?" She shook her head, hand still covering her mouth. "Joe Bob and Briggs told me. It refers to a poop that's so pure, it's devoid of any hard chunks whatsoever. Nothing but brown water through and through. Legend has it, it's the same thing that happens to you when you drink the water in Mexico, hence the name. Sam dry-heaved and coughed a little.
Stop it, Johnny. I mean, can you imagine what old Lil Murray's breath smells like after eating dog food and cotton candy? I bet it smells like, Johnny, stop it, I'm going to be sick.
Sam leaned forward, placing her hands over her ears to drown out my voice. Now, if this had been any other occasion than me trying to propose to her, I would have kept on. I didn't want to ruin the night, so I did something uncharacteristic. Okay, okay, I'm done. Sam sat up and took a few deep breaths.
I think it's past.
She turned and looked at me, my arm still around her, and whispered,
What the hell is wrong with those people?
I don't know, but can you imagine what the inside of old Dad's tidy whities look like? Sam put her hand back over her mouth and stomped on my toe. I winced in pain and then laughed a little. She responded with a smile and laid her head on my shoulder. About that time, the announcer came over the loudspeaker to kick things off, and Harold and Murray came scooching down the row. After about an hour of watching big trucks smash things and listening to rednecks mumble unintelligible tropes, the time came to put my plan into motion. Intermission was coming up, so I told Sam not to go anywhere because I was bringing her back some nachos and beer. I'll stop droning on and on and get to the good part. Cap wanted me to be all descriptive about walking out the stadium and down to where the trucks were and how the weather felt and so on and so forth, but that's just dumb. And besides, what does he know? This is his first time editing a book. So if there's a part you don't like or you think sucks, it's his fault, not mine. Because Johnny Ranger doesn't do suck. I brought Sam back some nachos and beer before I went and got the keys for Gravedigger. I told her my stomach hurt and I needed to go make a Mexican waterfall real quick. She laughed and shooed me on my way. I headed backstage to initiate my plan. When I arrived at the truck, the driver was there waiting for me. He walked towards me and held out his hand. I shook it. He was decked out in his monster truck driving threads. Hey, Johnny, you ready to sweep her off her feet? Hey, Denny, this piece of crap truck of yours ain't going to stall on me, is it? Denny smiled. Nah, man, she's primed and pristine, engine purring like a kitten. Raring to go for you. Yeah, well, she better not screw up my proposal. If she does, then I'm going to piss in her gas tank. Denny laughed. I'm telling you, Johnny, she's good. I looked him over and gave him my eyebrow raise. If you say so. I moseyed closer to the truck, reached out my hand, and ran it over one of the big tires. I looked back at Denny. Got the keys? In the ignition. He gave me a nod. Well then, I guess it's go time. I smiled, and then we shook hands again. I hoisted myself into the truck and shut the door. I wiggled into the seat, gripping the black steering wheel with both hands and grinned. This is so badass. I whispered to myself. I looked the whole cab over in awe. This was like redneck heaven. I was caged in neon green roll bars and silver gauges. Man, if Joe Bob and Briggs could see this. What the hell, I thought, and I whipped out my phone. I took a few pictures and texted them to Joe Bob and Briggs. Me, check it out, fellas. You jealous? Daggum, some of bitchin' epic, man. That's the prettiest dang thing I ever seen. Joe Bob. More beautiful than a mounted 18-point? I'm tearing up. Me, I even shook hands with Denny. Joe Bob, don't wash that daggum hand till I can touch it. Briggs, damn straight. Me, y'all are retarded. Briggs, what's the smell like in there? Me, what the hell is wrong with you? Joe Bob, yeah, man, does it smell all manly like sweat and motor oil and leather? Me, this combo is disturbing. Joe Bob. He got one of them chrome skulls on the gear shift? Me. Yeah. Joe Bob. Take that damn gold thing and bring it back. Me. What? Y'all are retarded? I ain't stealing nothing. Come on, Johnny man. Combo is over. I got a proposal to do. Joe Bob. So you gonna get the skull? I clicked my phone off and put it back in my pocket, shaking my head. Dumbasses. I looked down at the key in the ignition, and it had a skull chain hanging from it. All right, it's showtime. I put my foot on the brake and turned the key. The truck roared louder than Lil Murray's stomach. Hell yeah, I yelled. I revved the engine a few times and the truck screamed. Woohoo! I hollered, drumming the wheel. Then, the unexpected happened. A group of four dudes and a female stepped in front of the truck. Their shoulders rose and fell with their heavy breaths. Their eyes glowed orange and they snarled, saliva dripping down their mouths. Their parted lips revealed yellow, jagged teeth. The guys were dressed in black leather jackets and jeans. One wore a fly fishing hat with bait around the edges. Another had a blue bandana wrapped around his forehead like he was from a 1980s workout video. The other two had their brown hair slicked back. Her black hair was permed tighter than lug nuts on a NASCAR. She was sporting a blue jean jacket and a pink tutu. The hombre wearing the fly fishing hat pointed at me, his finger dripping blood.
Johnny Walker Ranger, Demon Slayer,
he snarled. What the hell is this? I mumbled. The Great Value version of the Lost Boys? I rolled down the window and stuck my head out. Yo, Jason Patrick, get the fuck out of my way. He flipped me off, blood dribbling down his middle finger. You don't get out of my way, asshole, and the rest of you is going to look like that finger, I yelled. The woman's arm went into motion, and she flung something about the size of a bowling ball at the truck. It hit the top of the hood with a thud and rolled to the windshield and hit it with a splat. I gawked at the object. It damn sure wasn't a bowling ball. The deadpan look of a severed human head stared back at me. The eyes were open in fright, and the mouth was wide, probably screaming before he died. The wounds on the neck were crude and jagged like they had either bitten it off or ripped it with their long nails. Blood dripped all over the glass and hood of the truck.
Coming for you, Johnny,
one of the dudes with the slick back hair said.
We'll swallow your soul! Swallow your soul! Swallow your soul!
The woman screamed. Hey, dipshits, I yelled. Make up your damn minds. George Romero or Sam Raimi? I rolled up the window. These demons get fucking dumber every time. I gripped the gear shaft. No, you don't. Not on my proposal night. Your mother so socks in hell. I shifted into first gear and mashed the gas. Normally, I would take my time and electrocute the possessed first, getting the demons out so I could save human lives and kill the scum from hell. But not tonight. I didn't have time. And besides, I was pissed. The engine roared and the tires spun. The possessed people darted out of the way. Fisherman Bob with the hat wasn't fast enough. I caught him with the front right tire and ran his ass over. His body crunched under the weight, popping like a bowl of Rice Krispies. His head exploded and brains and skull fragments blasted all over the concrete floor. Snap, crackle, pop, you asshole, I said with a giddy laugh. I glanced up in my rear view and saw Durag trying to make an escape. I shifted into reverse and crumbled his ass like sun-dried shit. Gotcha, you M&M looking peckerhead. The three surviving possessed people ran around in circles, screaming and arms flailing. I straightened the truck and went after them in hot pursuit. One, two, Johnny's coming for you. Three, four, smash your ass to the floor. Splat, I took out Greasehead numero uno. Five, six, gonna crush your dick. Crunch. There went Greasehead number two. The girl was getting away from me. In about 50 yards, she would be out from underneath the backstage parking and out in front of watching eyes. I floored it, shifting into second gear. Seven, eight, me squash you like a grape. I drew closer, the bumper tickling her ass. She glanced back over her shoulder and screamed. Her eyes were bulged in terror and her mouth was open so wide I could have stuck my foot in it. Nine, ten, and I thought I told you, bitch, Johnny always wins. Woohoo! My left tire sucked her under. Her head split open, and a geyser of blood and brains erupted all over the ground. I slammed on the brakes, and my body jolted forward. That was unexpected. I shifted into reverse and positioned the truck towards the entry to the Coliseum, staring out the windshield. Where did you bastards come from? I mumbled. Not good. Not good at all. My name came blaring out over the loudspeaker, shaking me from my thoughts. Ah, shit. Sam!
Oh, my God, that was amazing. I love that. There were so many parts I chuckled at, and I just think that was amazing.
I love all the references. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, obviously written by a true horror fan.
Yeah, there is a lot of homage to a lot of classic horror movies throughout the books, the first one and the second one. And so, you know, there's stuff in there for for everybody, no matter what type of horror you like. There's going to be some sort of Easter egg in there. It's kind of one of the things with the book. So it just that's pretty much what to expect from it. Just over the top antics, really funny. It's nonstop laughs and blood and guts. So.
And that is volume two. Do you have many more plans for Johnny Walker Ranger?
Yes, the third volume I have, Johnny Walker Ranger volume three, is going to be called Cryptids and Other Shit.
Nice.
And so it's gonna take a little bit of a turn here. With the demon possession, as you can imagine from the title, I have something pretty insane worked out. So that will be coming at some point later on down the line.
Mm-hmm.
So there's definitely more books planned for it. And there will also, this next year, I write a monthly series for Godless called Southern Discomfort, and you can expect Johnny Walker Ranger to make an appearance and have some stories in the 2024 lineup of Southern Discomfort.
Nice.
So,
nice.
He will be in it for sure.
Oh, I absolutely love the humor. Do you have other things that you write that is not as humorous? And is it, I don't know, you did make mention of, you know, when you're feeling down or anything, that, you know, you turn to Johnny. But is there other things that you write that just, you don't have the as much humor in it?
Yeah, there's, so Johnny is one extreme. I do pretty much all types of horror. That's what the Southern Discomfort series is, pretty much every subgenre of horror. I do something different each month. But then on the total opposite of that, I have that book series that I had mentioned last time on the show, the Dreadful Death series, which is the Possession series. That takes place in the 1800s. The third book was released this past spring, so that series is complete. It's the total opposite. It's really, really dark, really sinister, really intense, and very, very creepy and shocking. So it's the total opposite of what Johnny is. That's out. I'm working. I have another book in that universe coming out with D&T Publishing in the spring called The Tetramet Tapes. So if anybody out there likes found footage movies, this is kind of a found footage.
No, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So,
I think that's probably
that.
One of my favorites. It's just because it's, you know, you can make yourself believe it's real, you know. Or, you know, I remember watching, what was one of the first found footage? I don't know about first, but Paranormal Activity. I remember watching that. Now, it was a bunch of, you know, nothing happened. But at
that
the same time,
that was just a lot of CCTV footage, to be honest.
Yeah, it's true. But at the same time, the creepy things that did happen, I remember watching the first time, and I was like, you know, I think you have a little part of you that wants to believe it's real anyway, even though you know it's not, you know, it's a movie. But,
it kind of adds another layer of sort of realism to it. I mean, funny if I'm watching the fourth installment in the Hell House LLC.
That was good. That was so good.
And have you seen? I'm about halfway through the fourth one right now, and it's really good. I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah.
The first two were great. The third one I thought was a bit meh, but this fourth one sort of come back to the original. I'm absolutely loving it. It's I'm watching it in bed before I go to sleep, so it's a good one.
Yes, I would agree with you on that one. I love the first one. Second one was pretty good. Third one, not so much. But this fourth one, the Carmichael Origins, Carmichael
yes.
Manor.
Uh-huh.
Oh, it's top notch. It's good.
Yeah, don't spoil it. I've just got to the point where things are really starting to go down now. So, I'm enjoying it. I a lot of people say, oh, found footage is sort of had its day and that. But I think for the right material, I think, you know, something like that, the Hell House, I mean, it could only be found footage. I think if you tried to do it just standard, it would be nowhere near as impactful. So I think there'll always be room for good found footage, I have to say.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know I grew up with my mom videotaping my entire life and me and my brother making homemade horror movies. So like when the whole found footage thing hit, it was easy for me to kind of gravitate towards that. And I've always loved them, and I wanted to try something like that in story form.
Brilliant.
So it's something a little different. These kids find some VHS tapes in their creepy old neighbor's trash can, and they begin to watch the tapes, and the tapes lead them to investigate more into one of the urban legends out there where they grew up, and there's the old man's connected to it, there's a video camera connected to it that the kids get when they go out there, so it kind of falls into that type of genre. So
awesome. We have cameras in the house, and sometimes when we're not home, I like to check up on the dogs, and I think to myself every time, if I see something that isn't supposed to be there, it's a really creepy thought, especially when you're so far away that there really isn't anything that you can do about it.
Wouldn't that be cool, though? Again, what a great premise for a story. You know, you're miles away. Oh, just check on the dogs, and you look, and there's something big and monstrous just stood in the middle of your living room. That would be...
Oh, my gosh.
I can see that now. That would be a great story, that.
That would be terrifying, but scary, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you do?
Especially if
it's got, you know, one chihuahua in each hand and it's nonchalantly chewing their heads off. That would be great. I would love that.
Yeah, you would.
not a fan of chihuahuas.
Yeah.
That's the story I've seen. There you go.
Yeah. That would, you know, it terrifies me just to think about it. Now, I'm up here in the office by myself, and, you know, when you were talking, I heard a noise, and I'm looking around, and there's nothing in here, and I'm like, what could have made that noise? And, you know, for someone who likes horror, everything scares me, so.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You really are in the wrong job. You really are.
That's how my fiance is, Xtina. She is a horror fan, but she is a scaredy cat, and she's gonna go back and listen to this and be like, "I can't believe you said that." it's true. We have a lot of fun because we watch a movie every night together through video because she lives in another state right now. So we get on video and we'll pick something online streaming together and watch it. And, you know,
that is. I have to say that is so cute. Before me and my husband got together, you know, we used to do stuff like that too because we were online for a little bit and we would watch movies together and it was so cute. But never scary ones really though because, you know, like I said, I'm a big wuss and if I'm by myself, that, you know, James says he goes to bed at night and he can watch like The Exorcist and that would keep me up for like a week. So, you're cutting out pretty bad right now, Ezekiel. It sounds eerily
can you hear
like
me?
The. Oh, there you go. There you are. Yeah.
Good. I was saying James is my speed, like The Exorcist is my comfort horror movie. Like I can put that thing in and go to bed.
Hellraiser is another good one for me. Happily nod off in Hellraiser and have wonderful dreams. It's great.
I'm right there with you. We are just
trying for our show, and we've had so much fun. We have to definitely not go another year before we talk to you again, because this has been a lot of fun. Before we let you go, let us know where we can find you online.
All right, you can find me on Amazon, just Ezekiel Kincaid. You can find me on Godless as well. Also on Twitter and Instagram, at Ezekiel Kincaid for both of those. And my website is The Paranormal Pastor. And I am also on YouTube with Professional Paranormal Research. So I'm kind of in a lot of places. So
yeah.
You can find me Amazon, YouTube, Godless, or Twitter, Instagram. So I'm all on there.
Awesome. And for all of our listeners out there, go out and find Johnny Walker Ranger Demon Slayer Volume 2 by Ezekiel Kincaid. And thank you so much for coming back on the show, and we can't wait to have you back.
Yes, thank you. I always have a blast. I appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll speak to you again very soon. Good night.
Sounds good. Good night.
That was so much fun.
We say every week that time just flies by, and here we are. It is time to say good night, Xtina.
Woo! Good night, Xtina.
Good night.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse. When you're chewing on life's gristle, that grumble, give a whistle. And this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
It's quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. Forget about your scene, give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance to the hour.
So always look on the bright side of death.
Just
before you draw your terminal breath.
Piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life.
clothing I sent out. I'll never make that money back.